And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky here with Move the Sticks. It is a crazy, crazy, frenzied time right now. Obviously, in the world on the important scale, but in football, it's been a wild ride over the last couple of days, Buck. And we have a lot of things we're going to cover today. As we're recording this, Tom Brady it's been announced he's not going to be coming back to the New England Patriots. So we are going to do the podcast right now, not knowing where Tom Brady's going to go. We're going to get this out to you where we cover a lot of different topics. And then once the Brady decision comes down, we're going to produce another podcast just on where Brady goes, what that means for his new team, as well as the New England Patriots, where they go from there. It'll be a brief podcast, but we'll do our best to get that one out to you as soon as possible as well. But there's a lot to get to with what we already know around the league right now.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy, the stuff that has transpired in the league. I feel like it's just an ongoing circus, just like so many moves, so many things happening, guys going, people using the trade vehicles to upgrade their teams, and then finally getting word today of some guys that are on the trade block, some guys that are signing free agent deals. It's just been bananas the last 24 hours.
Well, let's start rolling through some of these other moves here, because we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about here. I mean, as we're talking, I mean, deals just continue to come down one after another after another. But why don't we jump in here first, Buck, and talk about some of the quarterback stuff. Really, just a little bit before we started recording, let's start with the Cam Newton news. It doesn't look like that's going to be a friendly ending there, but it is definitely an ending.
Yeah, DJ, I think ultimately the team made a business decision to move on from Cam Newton. They have given him permission to seek out a trade. This obviously means that when you look at the timing of it, they've been in negotiations, obviously, with some quarterback, and they feel like they're close to getting a deal done, which is why they would then allow Cam Newton to shop his services to other teams. I feel like this is something that we expected to happen. When they said that Cam would come back, it was a bit of a surprise. But now we kind of know. They were trying to protect themselves to make sure that they get the quarterback that they want before they move on from the long-term starter. That really helped the franchise get to Super Bowl prominence.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just curious to see what his next move is. I have a tough time coming up with teams, Buck, that I think would be in on Cam Newton. I saw one that was mentioned was the Washington Redskins. Obviously, familiarity there with Ron Rivera. With Coach Turner there as the offensive coordinator, who he's got, had a really good run to start the 2018 season. So that one, I guess, makes some sense. Are there any other teams that stand out to you with him?
Man, I don't even know if that one really makes sense, because what you have is you got a young starting quarterback in Dwayne Haskins. If you bring Cam in there, like, if you have any sense that Dwayne is going to be your guy, you only stunt his growth by having Cam there. And then, in actuality, what does Ron Rivera really think about Cam as a starting quarterback? He and Scott Turner, they've embarked on this new mission in Washington. Do they see Cam as being an upgrade or someone that they could kind of build the franchise around as they're trying to change the culture there? When I really survey the landscape, DJ, I don't see a really good landing spot for Cam. I know in the past Chicago had been mentioned as a possible destination, but when you get outside of that, without knowing his health status, I don't know how anyone could say that, hey, there's a starting job waiting for Cam Newton elsewhere, because no one knows. And I also don't know how many offensive coordinators are willing to take on that project to get Cam back to playing at a Pro Bowl level.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's difficult to come up with a team. So we'll see what happens there with him. As we're doing this, I mean, Buck, I mean, I'm just kind of scrolling through Twitter as we're recording, and it looks like Teddy Bridgewater and the Panthers are close on a 3-year contract. So that to me is an interesting fit. They're going to move on from Cam Newton, and then Teddy Bridgewater comes in there, and I would not be shocked if they use their first round pick, number 7 overall, on a quarterback as well. But to me, it's kind of a new start here, and it looks like Teddy Bridgewater is going to be that guy.
So DJ, if you go back and you connect the dots, there are a couple of things to unpack here when you talk about the Panthers and Teddy Bridgewater. Obviously, Joe Brady is the new offensive coordinator. Joe Brady spent time with the New Orleans Saints as an offensive assistant. Basically, in talking to people from the Saints, they say that when you looked at LSU's offense, Joe Brady was basically using a scaled-down version of what the Saints have done for years, their base plays to really dominate the college game. Well, now that Joe Brady has been elevated to being an NFL offensive coordinator, why not reach back to New Orleans, get Teddy Bridgewater, who knows not only the base level offensive stuff, but he can bring some of the new innovations and new variations that they've added since Joe Brady departed. To me, it makes sense. The only thing that I would worry about if I'm Teddy Bridgewater is how long is my leash on this starting job? Because if they do what we're speculating, A, they're going to draft a quarterback in the first round, you know the clock starts as soon as they draft the kid. So if I'm Teddy Bridgewater, is this the most stable and secure situation that I could be in? And can I get enough money to make me feel okay with what could happen in a year or two if they do decide to use me as a bridge quarterback in transition? I would think that the Patriots, if the Patriots are in play, would be a little better deal just in terms of the way that the team has been constructed and the way that Bill Belichick has treated quarterbacks previously. But, hey, when you got $60 million on the table, depending on the amount of guarantees that are in there, I can't fault Teddy Bridgewater for taking a big deal.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. And I think it's also fascinating you're inside this division here with the Saints kind of having to make their decision of what they wanted to do going forward. And now you're going to have Teddy Bridgewater playing for a division rival. So it's going to be fun to watch as that all unfolds. Buck, we could go through a bunch more quarterback stuff here. Drew Brees, I don't think there's really much to say there. We expected that. He's back with the Saints. I expect probably by the time folks are listening to this that the Phillip Rivers deal will be done with the Indianapolis Colts. So that takes another one off the market. But when we look at the wide receiver position, Buck, I mean, try and make sense of this. When you look at the trades for DeAndre Hopkins and then you look at the trade, what happened with the Buffalo Bills acquiring Stephon Diggs, trying to sort out the difference in compensation there is it's a mind blowing difference between the two, what they were able to bring.
Look, man, it's a difference. But DJ, we've talked about this when we're building a team and an organization. There's a reason why teams have general managers and head coaches, and they're typically not the same person. Ideally, you want to think about building this like branches of the government. You want to have a checks and balances system. Ultimately, someone has the final say. But what you would like in a front office is to have a general manager who can challenge the head coach and vice versa. I've always felt head coaches think about the here and now. What can we do for the team today, maybe tomorrow? The general manager is supposed to think about the long-term viability of the franchise. How can we have a long, sustained, successful run where we can compete for titles? And sometimes that might mean taking a step back or not making a move, whereas head coaches, because a lot of head coaches are a little more emotional and reactive, they have a tendency to kind of get in their feelings, and sometimes that can be the driving force of the moves that they make. I felt like in Houston, whatever the situation was with Bill O'Brien and DeAndre Hopkins, it was at a point where he felt the need to make a move and wanted to make the move right now. Whereas I think a general manager would have played it out a little slower and tried to really build up that market before they made the move.
Buck, I mean, it's interesting when you look at the compensation, I mean, for the two players, and you look at Hopkins, what he was able to get in return. Now, I think you ask anybody around the league, you say he's a top five wide receiver, but you trade DeAndre Hopkins and a fourth round pick. You get David Johnson and his big contract, a running back who has not been the same, who the Cardinals were looking to get rid of. So you're going to take on that contract, and then you get a second-round pick this year and a fourth-round pick next year. So that's what you get for Hopkins. And then you look at what the Vikings were able to do in their move. They send Stephon Diggs. They get a 1, a 5, a 6, and a 2021 4 from the dig for Diggs. They also include a seventh-round pick with Diggs. But, Buck, to not get a one for Hopkins, at least a back-end one, something, that was shocking to me.
I mean, it's shocking, but we've seen Bill O'Brien kind of do a handful of these deals. And you understand it, DJ. Like, there's an experience and a wisdom that comes with kind of thriving in the general manager role. And when you're a head coach and so many of your obligations are getting the team ready to play and dealing with things that are related to on-field action, you don't have the ability to understand fully how to execute personnel moves, how to weigh and play the trade game, and all of those things. And what you're seeing in that aspect, you saw an experienced general manager take advantage of an inexperienced personnel man. Steve Keim played it out. He was able to dump a player that they really didn't have any use for and get back a big time player while without having to get up a top pick. I mean, it is just a classic case of an experienced guy taking advantage of someone who doesn't fully understand what they're doing.
And this is what I said yesterday when this all went down, is this is exciting for Kyler Murray, not just because what you're going to get with DeAndre Hopkins in this offense, with DeAndre Hopkins and Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald, and also Kenyon Drake, who they're going to keep, who can really get involved in the passing game as well out of the backfield. But this frees them up. Now they can take a tackle with the 8th overall pick. They re-signed DJ Humphrey. So the hope is you get this offensive line in good shape. You're going to be able to get more guys out into the route, which is going to give him more options. And especially when you have somebody like Hopkins, it's going to demand attention. So you're going to have more options out in the route. But Buck, it's going to spread the field and give him more room. So when he wants to run, I think he only ran for about 500 yards last year. Somebody ran for over 1,000 at Oklahoma. So I think this is going to give him more opportunities in the run game. And as we've seen, he's very good at protecting himself once he gets into the open field.
Look, I mean, it's one of those things where you're trying to build strength on strength. And with Cliff Kingsbury being an offensive mind, a guy who showed that he could put together an NFL offense last year during his first year as a head coach in the league, Kyler Murray, you talked about Kenyon Drake and Larry Fitzgerald, Christian Kirk, DeAndre Hopkins. You now have an opportunity in this division where we can say the LA Rams are coming back to the pack. We can say that the Seattle Seahawks are always there, but maybe the Arizona Cardinals make some ground up on the Seattle Seahawks and put themselves in a position where maybe they can compete to be a 9-7, 10-6 team if everything goes their way. It's just really interesting to see how that has been put together, because if they get this offense rolling, they could have one of the more explosive offenses, not only in the division, but in the NFC.
What do you think about this from the Vikings perspective with Stephon Diggs and actually even more so the Bills perspective of them making a run, giving up a first round pick for Stephon Diggs?
I like Stephon Diggs as a player. I think he's a crafty route runner, one of the best route runners in the league. I can understand why the Minnesota Vikings would want to move on from him. There were issues that you saw pop up on social media where he kind of voiced his displeasure. He has a little bit of the wide receiver personality, diva-like personality, where it's a lot of high maintenance that you have to deal with and navigate through. And also, let's be honest, DJ, this draft is one where there's so many wide receivers. If you have a good feel for how to evaluate and pick receivers, you can find a guy that can replace Stephon Diggs' production and performance. For the Buffalo Bills, this is a tricky one. I love upgrading the wide receiver core. I think it's important that they have the ability to get big plays in the passing game. I just wonder if Stephon Diggs is a good match for Josh Allen. We talked about building a basketball team in Buffalo, even building a track team where you got speedsters and the like. But you have to make sure that your wide receivers can make up for Josh Allen's deficiencies when it comes to his accuracy and his ball placement. I love Stephon Diggs. He's not a big receiver. So I just wonder if they can get another big guy to do some of those things that they eventually need done when you have a quarterback like Josh Allen at the helm.
Yeah, it's all point guards. I mean, Stephon Diggs, 6-footer. Cole Beasley's not a big guy. John Brown, not a big guy. So there's nobody really to play above the rim when you get down to the red zone specifically there as well, Buck. So that to me was a little bit interesting. But you remember, I think people forget about this. You remember the Buffalo Bills had the trade for Antonio Brown before Antonio Brown poo-pooed it. So that was the type of player that they were looking to find. And I don't think Stephon Diggs is as talented as Antonio Brown, but he's that same type of receiver.
He is. And so what they might mean is, remember, Brian Daboll spent time with the New England Patriots. And a lot of the New England Patriots stuff was catch and run, option routes, get it out the quarterback's hands quickly, and then let those playmakers have their way in the open field. We saw with the Buffalo Bills, Cole Beasley had a very solid season for the Buffalo Bills. And if you think about reworking this offense where you want Josh Allen to not only push the ball down the field off play action, but to also have some of that quick screen, quick isolation route game, some of that stuff to it where you empty it out, empty the formation out. Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley would be a headache to defend. We just have to continue to see the development and the maturation of the quarterback to see if he can get his skill set to match the level of the playmakers that he has around him.
All right, let's get to what happened with the D-tackle situation, specifically with the 49ers. They re-signed Arik Armstead, 5 years, $85 million deal. And we thought, okay, they're going to keep this whole group together. They're investing in that defensive line. And then the shocker came. They end up trading DeForest Buckner to the Indianapolis Colts for the 13th overall pick. And now Buckner signs a new deal there at $21 million a year, Buck, which puts him just behind Aaron Donald. When you talk about highest paid defensive tackles in the NFL. So 49ers, a team that needed some draft picks. We talked about the fact that they were absolutely going to trade out of the 31st pick just to get some picks. Now they have the 31st pick as well as the 13th pick. And I actually kind of like this trade for both teams. How about you?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, with Chris Ballard and the Indianapolis Colts, like there is something to when we say in the acquisition business, knowing the proven player as opposed to guessing behind what's behind door number one or door number two. The one thing that the Indianapolis Colts know is they have tangible proof that DeForest Buckner is a dominant player. We've seen him do it. We've seen what system works for him. We have seen him play at a high level in the National Football League. Sometimes we become so enamored. And look, you and I both come from the college side. It's easy to become enamored with hoarding draft picks and being able to, hey, let's make our picks and we're going to get them all right. But we understand the success rate is really, really hard when it comes to leaning on the draft. And so I can appreciate Chris Ballard leaning into the trade market to get a blue chip player, someone that he knows can dominate and dominate for a long time. But I also can appreciate the San Francisco 49ers wanting to have more ammunition to up their team. And this will not be discussed, but I think it's something that does factor into it. I know DeForest Buckner was a dominant player. And for so long last year, we talked about the San Francisco 49ers having five number one picks on that defensive line. And I'm not saying that Solomon Thomas can go and do what DeForest Buckner does or that they play the same position. But I do believe that when they're looking at their roster and they're looking at how they've invested in their D-line, I do believe the Solomon Thomas factor has to come in because somewhere in that room, somebody felt like Solomon Thomas was a high-end blue-chip player and he just needs a chance. Maybe that is why they felt like they could move on from DeForest Buckner and maybe find another replacement for him, while maybe giving Solomon Thomas one more opportunity to get on the field in some way, shape, or form.
Man, we talk so much about those five first-rounders, Buck. There's some good depth and some really good players behind that group, too. But when you talk about DJ Jones, who's got some ability, is a really interesting player there. And I'm looking at this draft and the way it could shake out. Just if you look at the needs, we're going to see a run on the offensive tackles early. We're going to see those quarterbacks go. So is it crazy to think that, in my opinion, two of the top seven or eight players in the draft are Derek Brown and Javon Kinlaw? I don't think it's out of the possibility one of those guys gets to him there at 13. And now you're talking about being able to replace somebody with a, you know, on a rookie deal, 5 years of control, and your defensive line not going to skip a beat.
No, that's the deal. I think that's a good thing. DJ, we talked about part of building the team is being able to have those conversations where you bring the pro and college departments together and you talk about the strengths and weaknesses of the free agent market and of the draft and being able to accurately assess, here's where the draft is strong, here's where we're looking at, if we're at this pick, what could be available. And the name that I think about, you talk about Derek Brown, but I'm thinking Javon Kinlaw could be sitting right there for them. We talked about in mock drafts, and mock drafts are what they are, but we talked about Kinlaw being mocked to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but we hadn't had scenarios where we saw him going before that. Well, now you're the San Francisco 49ers. You're sitting in prime position to get a guy that can, in essence, do what DeForest Buckner did, and as you said, do it on a cheap rookie contract, to be able to then take that money that you would have spent on Buckner and spread it around to other positions. Look, I think it's smart. I think it's a smart play, and I think it's one of those situations where the San Francisco 49ers could have a couple different positions that they target. And, hey, if Kinlaw isn't here, let's turn our attention to getting a big-time wide receiver. You know, there's just so many options for what the 49ers need that are available. It makes sense to be able to have two bites at the apple in the first round.
All right, let's talk about a little bit what we've seen in free agency and how it impacts the draft, because it is something we're just talking about here with the 49ers and what it does for them. But I think it's fascinating when you look at the Miami Dolphins loading up. They go out and pay Byron Jones all that money. They go out and get Kyle Van Noy. They've been very, very aggressive. Shaq Lawson, they brought in him. So they've addressed a lot of spots. Of, you know, Eric Flowers on the offensive line. This is not a team that's pointing towards, you know, tank for Trevor in 2021. This is a team that's trying to win right now, which to me points to the fact of any talk of them kicking the quarterback thing down the road is moot. This is a team that's going to take a quarterback, and makes a lot of sense with the fifth pick to do that. And we've talked about it, Buck. I do not rule out the fact of them taking Herbert over Tua. And when you look at all the pieces they have in place to go try and be competitive right now, maybe it's a situation where they say, hey, Herbert, we can plug him into the lineup and let's get going right now. Whereas Tua, you might be looking at a red shirt. I'm not saying that's what I would do. I know it's not what you would do as well, but that would not shock me.
No, it wouldn't shock me. I think it gives them options. It gives them options at the quarterback position to do what they want to do and to do it how they want to do it, whether it's Tua or Justin Herbert. I think we need to understand that Ryan Fitzpatrick played well enough for them to be very, very competitive. Ryan Fitzpatrick also has a relationship with Chan Gailey. And depending upon how Chan Gailey views Ryan Fitzpatrick as he ages gracefully at the position, maybe it does give them a year or two to groom a quarterback to be the starter. But I absolutely like what the Miami Dolphins are doing. And actually, I was going to pitch this out to you because we've talked about the old model of team building and how everything is about the passing game. And so we would rank and prioritize the positions as, hey, quarterback, pass rusher, left tackle, cornerback. The Miami Dolphins went out and got Byron Jones, made him the highest paid cornerback in football. A year ago, they signed Xavien Howard to a big time extension. They now have two high priced corners on the edges. Doesn't appear that they have like a marquee pass rusher. But when we've seen the New England Patriots in the past, the Patriots put their energies and efforts in coverage, not pass rush. They believe they can cover you up, they're rush four, and they will win that way. I just think Brian Flores is following the model that he learned in New England and putting his resources on the perimeter so they can play man-to-man, cover everybody up, and make life very, very difficult for the quarterback to find open windows to hit wide receivers.
Yeah, and I think it also, again, points to the draft. You talk about the New England belief system and how you do that. Well, what about the Detroit Lions, who where they're going to be picking, even if they were to trade back a little bit from the third pick? You know, they're going to be looking at the defensive tackles like a Derrick Brown or a Kinlaw, or is it a linebacker like Isaiah Simmons, or do you just go get the top corner and Jeffrey Okuda? And to me, that is another reason to kind of to marry up Okuda with the Lions.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's really a smart play. The Lions typically traditionally haven't operated like that. But when you think about Matt Patricia and Brian Flores and the New England model, and then you go and you look at the next gen stats and the PFF stats, and those teams play man to man more than any other team in the National Football League. Well, if you're going to play that style, you have to have a stable of cornerbacks that are young, athletic, and capable of just running all over the field. Jeffrey Okuda certainly can do that. I'm the Detroit Lions. I'm definitely thinking that way, unless Isaiah Simmons is staring me right in the face and I can come up with a creative plan to unleash him on the second level of the defense.
Yeah. Buck, there's so many different things we can go through. We can't go through each and every move, but how about one more here? Robert Quinn signing with the Bears to team up with Khalil Mack. Robert Quinn played very well last year, and we started to see him in a good fit for how he likes to play with the Dallas Cowboys. You started to see that ability that made him such a high pick really come out.
Yeah. I mean, look, we saw Robert Quinn definitely get his game on, and we saw him begin to kind of flourish. And this is kind of a rebirth, a renaissance, because he showed people that he definitely could still play. And I think sometimes with injuries and the like, we kind of lose sight of this was a guy that played at a high level with the Rams. He and Chris Long were able to dominate and disrupt and create havoc, kind of lost his way a little bit in Miami, brought it back a little bit in Dallas. We saw him pop and have a double-digit sack season. And so that was terrific. I think the bigger thing is, what is the lesson to be learned? Because the next move was to see the Chicago Bears release Leonard Floyd. And what I think was interesting with Leonard Floyd when he was coming out, it was kind of a deal where we have a tendency to fall in love with the athletic traits, right? We see the size, we see the speed, and we, I don't want to say ignore the production, but we don't necessarily get the production in terms of the sack production, what it should be factored into the equation when we're speculating about a guy being a double-digit sack artist. His last year at Georgia, he only had 4.5 sacks. He had 6 sacks the year before and then 6.5 the previous year. So what you're talking about is about 17 sacks in his career. And sometimes we think guys just pop at the next level because they're big, fast, and athletic. And I don't know if he was necessarily skilled. And so I think when we're evaluating the pass rusher, the edge rusher position, we need to make sure that the guys are skilled and they have some semblance of a resume that says, hey, these guys are going to be able to consistently sack the quarterback, especially when we're picking them in the top 10.
No doubt. Last thing here with the Raiders signing Corey Littleton, they've signed a couple linebackers here, which, again, I want to bring this back to the draft. They still have a glaring need with receiver, and I think it's a good job there with Mayock and Gruden of realizing the strength of this draft. You're picking 12 and 19. Shore up the linebacker position. Free yourself up a little bit where you can go ahead and take a phenomenal wide receiver with one of those two picks.
Look, I mean, I think that's terrific. And I think also couple that with the Marcus Mariota signing. Because in my mind, I would say if I'm the Oakland Raiders, I'm going to treat Marcus Mariota as if it's a draft pick. Because you're talking about a guy that was taken second overall. We already know that Mike Mayock liked him. We know that John Gruden liked him when he was coming out. And if they believe that they can fix Marcus Mariota and get him unleashed, it then takes them out of that quarterback market that has been lightly speculated that maybe Jordan Love would be a player. And now it's just about acquiring playmakers, blue chip players that can enhance and upgrade the team on both sides of the ball, whether that's a wide receiver, whether that's a corner, whether that's a second level defender. It just enables them to take the best player available and put him wherever they need to put him to upgrade the team.
Yeah, it has been a wild, wild ride. A couple other things here. You know, I talked about it a long time ago about the Browns were going to sign Jack Conklin. That ended up getting done. I still think they're a really good chance they end up taking a tackle with their first round pick at number 10 overall. That would not surprise me to see them double up there. The Jets signed George Fant, who's not a sexy name, but a real athletic and is going to, you know, be a tackle for them and their zone scheme. They're going to run a lot more zone scheme stuff this year. So athleticism will be featured with him. I still think they're in the tackle business going forward. So we'll see what else they do building up their team. But, man, it has been a wild, wild ride, Buck.
Yeah, it's been crazy to watch. And I'm going to say this. In the midst of doing this, you and I still have our eyes cast on the draft and how it will impact it. I am releasing an updated version of my top fives. No major changes at the top. Everything kind of stayed the same as it relates to the combine. But I kind of brought up the point about Leonard Floyd because one guy that I'm struggling with, and I know you feel strongly about him, Kalyvon Chasen, I've had a tough time with in terms of trying to figure out where he fits. I have no questions about the athleticism, the speed, the burst, and the playmaking ability in terms of being able to run and chase. I do have questions about, is he going to be kind of that dominant edge rusher? And I know we talk about not scouting the helmet, but I have the horrors of Barkevis Mingo and Arden Key kind of hanging in the background. So I've been very, very slow and reluctant to give him a big grade just because I'm just wondering, will he be different than the guys that I saw previously at LSU?
No, I think that's fair. We've talked about this before on the podcast. Like I think he's a different player than those guys. Look, Arden Key's been a health issue a good bit with him. Chaseon's had some injuries too. So there is a similarity there. I have him as my 25th overall player. I think initially you're going to be, more excited with using him on games and stunts and looping him and doing all kinds of stuff like that. He's a little bit more of an athlete than a polished rusher right now. But I thought as you see him recovering, you know, having some time away from his injury towards the end of the year, I thought you really saw him put things together. And he's, you know, Barkevious Mingo couldn't, you know, he just had no strength, no play strength. Yeah. I think this kid actually holds up at the point of attack and he's got some strength. So that's why I'd say he's different than those guys. But yeah, I mean, I don't think he's a top 10, top 15 player, but I think there's a chance he goes in the top 15 yep. just because of the edge rusher class and what it is.
Oh, I absolutely do that. Now, I will say the thing that may kind of slow it down a little bit, because I think he definitely would have skyrocketed up the charts if he had his pro day at LSU and he put ridiculous numbers up. I think now, yeah. because it's a little more based on the tape, it may not be the top 10, top 15 status that we were thinking about potentially he could rise to. But yeah, look, he's talented. There's no doubt about the talent. I just think it is just very, very hard sometimes to like get these what I call pure speed rushers right. And I think I'm also scarred by like the way that I kind of fell in love with Vic Beasley in the process. He had that great year, but for the majority of his career, he didn't pop. And so you just like to make sure that guys have a little more than just that fastball, that they can hit you with something else.
No, I hear you. Well, we're going to have time. This is definitely a free agent heavy podcast today, but we're going to start unpacking all this stuff as it pertains to the draft. We've got a bunch of teams with new picks now, Buck, with all the trades we've seen take place. Mm-hmm. So if you're a Minnesota Viking fan, all of a sudden now you're a little more juiced about this draft. Same if you're a San Francisco 49er fan, you're a little bit more pumped up as well. So it's going to be fun as we march towards the draft. It's definitely an unusual time in the world right now. But man, it's always good to get together with you, Buck, and just talk some ball.
Nah, man, this is fun. This is fun. Like we had a lot of action. The league year is upon us. All the action. I can't wait. I'm sure there's gonna be more before our next podcast to talk even more about.
All right. Well, that's gonna do it for us today. I do want to thank special thanks to Nabil and Arjuna and the big man Mark running the show here to figure out a way that we could get these podcasts out and delivered to you guys while everybody is at home during this. This difficult time around the world. So I want to thank them for all their hard work. Hope you guys have enjoyed it, and we'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.